Before we begin today's show, Stephen A. Smith is one of the most well-known names in all of sports media, which is why he's bringing his one-of-a-kind segments and can't-miss interviews to ESPN Plus fans. The show is called Stephen A.'s World, and if you want to learn more, simply sign up now at ESPNplus.com. On top of all that, be sure to check out the Jalen and Jacoby podcast. They release new episodes every day, as well as a podcast-exclusive content just for their loyal listeners. If you're interested, download and subscribe to the Jalen and Jacoby podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing today with Tim McMahon joining us from Dallas, Texas. Hello, Tim.
Howdy, partners.
Virtually attended the Rockets-Wizards game last night, which we're going to be talking to, and spicy.
Are we calling that virtually attending? Sitting on the couch, watching it, and covering it via Zoom? Okay,
yeah,
cool.
That's what we're calling it. Yeah, you have a problem with that?
No, I listen, makes me sound a lot more valuable than I am. I'll take it.
Joining us virtually from Boston, is that an appropriate usage of virtually?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Joining us virtually from Boston is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, Brad.
Timmy Good Times.
That's me.
So by the time you guys hear this podcast, this game will have already been played. But that's never stopped us before. So why wouldn't we keep firing onward? The Lakers are in Philly tonight. Two teams with the best records in each conference for the moment. Hey, Bontemps, what was Philly's home record last year when the shutdown hit, like 25-1 or something?
It was incredibly good, whatever it was. Yeah. I don't know exactly off the top of my head, but it was the best home record in the league, and they lost one or two games at home all season.
Guess who has the best home record in the 2020-21 season at home?
Gonna assume it is the Philadelphia 76ers.
Philly, 9-1. Lakers, by the way, 10-0 on the road. Philly, something about Philly, even without the fans, they're just terrific at home. Different coach, different record. Let them play at home. So we are at, you know, I think a lot of teams have played 17 to 19 games. This is the point of the season where the MVP race, it's certainly not won or lost, but it starts to get framed at this point, especially in a 72 game season. And who knows how many games we actually end up playing. You know, we're essentially at the quarter pole. And two of the guys, McMahon, who are in my mind in this race, I mean, we can debate how deep the race is. LeBron and Embiid are playing in this game. Embiid is playing best basketball of his career. We talked about him on the podcast with Chinay, that came out on Monday. You know, this is a game that has a little bit of a piece of the MVP race that could potentially be in it.
I do love talking about MVP race. What is it? Are we a month into the season now?
Yeah, but this is when it gets – I mean, I know what you're saying, but go back and look at the history.
Quarter of the way into the season now.
Okay. Okay. Now,
I'm not saying somebody's going to win or lose it tonight. I'm telling you, though, it gets framed by right now.
Yeah, I agree with that. And honestly, I feel like this year – and I saw that some of the Las Vegas books put LeBron as the favorite. Luka went into the season as the favorite. But I feel like this year it is LeBron's award to lose. I think LeBron won. If you're just like, who's the best player in the league, not who's the MVP of the regular season, who's the best player in the league.
That's another topic that's been around for
but
a long time.
That's a unanimous, right? Everybody's going to say LeBron.
But that was true last year, and he didn't win.
Right. And then I think LeBron did a nice little bit of lobbying in the bubble. And I think that might influence some votes.
Give me my respect, too.
Yeah. A nice little bit of lobby. And look, if the Lakers...
I want my damn respect, too.
If the Lakers run away with the best record in the league and LeBron is as dominant and efficient as he's been, I think he probably should be the MVP. But, you know, Embiid can make a case if the Sixers end up being the team with the best record in the Eastern Conference, if he's going to put up, you know, career best numbers, if he's going to be a dominant force on both ends of the floor, then he can make a case.
Bontemps, LeBron is averaging a career low in minutes this year. But his His advanced stats and other stats are really good. And one of the most interesting things is he's shooting the three-pointer. You know, again, we're early, but he's shooting the three-pointer the best he ever has. And that's part of what's driving the Lakers. They're shooting the three-pointer very well in general. There was this belief this year that he may ease into the season because of the real short layoff. That hasn't happened. And the Lakers, nobody's questioning whether they're for real. And that frames the race, fair or not.
Yeah, look, the MVP is a narrative award, as we know. And LeBron has a pretty strong hold on the narrative. You know, if that, you know, he's been great. They have the best record in the league. If their record slips a bit, if his and the team's three-point shooting slips a bit, which there's at least a chance it will happen over the final three quarters of the season, things may shift a little bit. But look, I think McMahon makes a great point about the bubble. LeBron was very calculated, I think, in kind of putting that narrative out there. And, you know he thinks about this stuff. He mentioned back in the preseason about talking to Marcus Gasol about getting the Defensive Player of the Year award that LeBron thought he should have got back in 2013. There's no question he thinks about this stuff in terms of his legacy. And, you know, I think if there's a tie this year, LeBron, from a career lifetime achievement award situation, is going to probably have a pretty strong leg up on the competition for getting that award. And as of now, like, I think it comes down to, you know, the three guys we've mentioned, you know, Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, and LeBron. And I think that if there's a tie between any of those three guys, or, you know, between LeBron and one of those other guys, they're going to have to do their best to get ahead of them. Cause I think if it's anywhere close, I think that the kind of the general narrative is going to shift in LeBron's direction.
So the Nuggets got to shoot up the standings for Jokic, right, to get in there. And just like, look, if Luke is going to have any chance in hell, the Mavericks have to get on a major role. Russ won it as a six seed, but I think
he had the narrative, he had the narrative, yeah, because Durant had left and he averaged a triple double.
Right. And look, Jokic might average a triple double. Luka might average a triple double, but if you're not at least a top three seed in the West, I just don't see how you can, how you can topple LeBron if LeBron.
Also, don't think, regardless of the numbers, I just don't think Giannis can win it because of the playoffs, yeah, the last 2 years. And that you may say that that's not fair. And
well, that goes back to the narrative again. I mean,
yes, it's just part of it.
Drives these awards. That's right.
So like,
hey,
you know,
listen, we can't, I don't think we can just dismiss Kevin Durant though.
I agree. I think Durant's in there. You know, you correct McMahon that typically you can go cherry pick years where this has not been the case, but typically it comes from a team that's in the top three or four record wise in the league, give or take, maybe five. It has not now for Embiid and Jokic, and we're in a different era. And Embiid's numbers are just spectacular and spectacular at both ends. I think Philly's in the top three in defense, if not top three, maybe they slipped to four, and he's a driving force in that. There hasn't been a true center win the MVP since Shaq in 2000. Garnett won it with the Wolves, and he played some center, but he's not a true center. Duncan won it a couple of times, but he didn't, you know, he was point or power forward slash center. Dirk won it as a power forward. Those are sort of the big men who've won it. The burden for, you know, and of course all the way through the 60s, 70s, you know, it was all centers winning it, you know.
Well, even the 90s, you know, Shaq. Robinson, Shaq.
Right.
Yeah. So, it's just a different era right now. So the burden is high for those guys, even though you would look at Jokic and say, well, he's not traditional center at all. But some of the things that went against LeBron in recent years, which, you know, some of those years in Cleveland, he just sort of skated through the regular season by his standards.
Right.
His numbers were awesome, but he just didn't have the gas down, whereas some of the other guys did. He got caught up in the whole Steph Curry, you know, rush there. I mean, Steph was having, you know, mm-hmm, incredible seasons. The game was changing. He was leading the change. You know, this same sort of thing happened to with Nash. You know, Nash changed the whole NBA. In addition to how great he played when he won those back-to-back MVPs, he changed the NBA, and Steph changed the NBA. And so, you know, there's all these circumstances, but the circumstances this year favor LeBron. Number one, we have a janky season. Number two, we have some of the strongest contenders are either going to be hard pressed to make it because their team's record or have this thing over their head. Like with Giannis, I mean, LeBron is still frustrated that he didn't win five MVPs in a row, but when he went to Miami, there was a thing hanging over his head and it affected the voting. I still say that Derrick Rose won that sucker fair and square, but there are different people who can debate on that, that year that Derrick Rose won in between the back-to-back ones that LeBron won in Cleveland and Miami. But this year, I think some things favor him. And I'll tell you one thing, LeBron's defensive numbers are very good. And one of the numbers I was looking at today was Second Spectrum data that Sports Information, ESPN Sports and Information put together. He's
stats
numbered.
Information.
I'm sorry, I botched that. ESPN Stats and Information Group.
You had him as Sports Information Directors, maybe like the University of Akron.
Within ESPN, we just call them SIG. That's our acronym for them, Sports Information Group, SIG. Of all the guys who have been the primary defenders this year, contesting shots from over 100, he's got the second. Long story short, I've botched this 10 times over. Guys are shooting 30% against him when he's the primary defender. It's the second best in the league. Now that's a number you could play with that number, and you know it's tracking data, et cetera, et cetera. He had a pretty good defensive year last year. The Lakers are one of the top defensive teams in the league. The Lakers, when they want to, are really good defensively. His defensive play has been really good, and his defensive play in the bubble was really good too. So, you know, I voted for Giannis last year and have no qualms about it, but I certainly recognize that after the bubble, the difference between Giannis and LeBron was very, very clear. And nobody, I wouldn't have debated that even during the regular season, but Giannis had an all-time great regular season last year. Mm-hmm. But I'm
and
sure
the Bucks had the best record in the league. Yes. You know that was a factor as well.
That's right. And McMahon makes a great point about Durant. He should be in this group. It really should be four guys because he looks incredible and basically looks back to what he was before his Achilles tear. And if he continues that play all season, and the Nets are a top two team in the East, he's definitely going to be in the mix.
True, but also. It's going to be hard to win that award under the circumstances that they're going through.
Right. Not if they have a bottom five defense in the league and they have the second best record in the NBA and they're doing it because they're scoring 130 points a game.
But will they have the second best record in the NBA?
Well, that's what my point is McMahon made a good point. Durant is playing well enough that he is going to be in the mix. And when you talk about narrative driving these awards, Kevin Durant having the greatest comeback from an Achilles tear in the history of the sport, is going to be a strong narrative in his favor.
Well, in the limited sample size of playing with the big three, his shot numbers are down. I would say Durant needs to average the most shots on that team.
Harden needs to be second.
That's right. And Harden is a distant third.
For Harden to go an entire night and only get 10 shots, the only time that should ever happen is when he's in a gentleman's establishment. That should never happen during an NBA game. 10 shots out of the club. Okay. That's a good, you don't want to go over that. That's a good policy. But dude, he needs to be getting up 10 shots a half. They did not, he is a great passer, but they did not bring him to Brooklyn.
He's averaging in the four games with Kyrie. Is it four or five? Four games with Kyrie, I think. He's averaging 11 shots a game. And if you watched him play, he is absolutely yielding.
Yes.
To Kyrie.
You've watched him more than anybody the past several years. How long do you think this is going to be? He's clearly looks like he's trying to kind of ingratiate himself into the situation there. How long do you think that's going to continue?
That's a great question. I think James is, he has to be well aware that there's been an expiration date on his superstar tandems in the past. And specifically with ball dominant guys, with Chris Paul, it was that second year they butted heads. Last year with Russ, it was kind of wonky the whole year, even when Russ was playing great. He's hesitant of that. This is not his franchise. He's the guy who was the last one in. But, the other night against Miami was like he was so passive for three quarters. And then the fourth quarter is like, you know what? The hell with this.
I'm going to win my game.
And he dominates the fourth quarter. So he needs to, like, Harden can't be worried about hurting Kyrie's feelings.
And I mean, I don't know what's going on.
That's what it looks like.
I don't know what's going on in that locker room. I've watched a majority of the games that they've played with Kyrie. I think I've watched like three of the four, two and a half of the four. Like, my biggest takeaway out of the two games in Cleveland. Now, Durant did not play in the second game. My biggest takeaway for the two games in Cleveland was I couldn't believe how yielding Harden was being to Kyrie.
Well, the takeaway from the two games in Cleveland should have been that their defense is an absolute dumpster fire.
Well,
but you knew that. The question is, are they going to be such a historically elite offense that they can get up with being, you know, get away with being mediocre or worse defensively? I tell you what, though, if you're a center and you want to put up big numbers, boy, you can't wait to see the Nets on the schedule. I can guarantee you that. But look, they didn't give up all the picks and all the swaps and Caris LeVert and Jared Allen for Harden to be the third wheel. You know, for Harden to be a guy who, okay, let me just move the ball and, okay, if you need me, I'm over here. That's now, Kyrie ultimately needs to be the guy who kind of figures out how he fits in this, and Harden and Durant got to play their game, because you've got two MVP caliber players and then a perennial all-star, but Kyrie is definitely at least a tier below those guys in terms of talent.
Well, he's really, really valuable in the postseason. Although, having said that, last time he played in the postseason, it didn't
go. He single-handedly short-circuited his team the last time he was in the postseason.
You know, like, here's the thing. I know that this is a bit coarse, but I'm just going to be real. Can you count on Kyrie to be there? I don't know if you can. And for that reason alone, I think you got to make sure Durant and Harden are, you know, A and B. Because I just don't know.
And to McMahon's point, James Harden is just a better player than Kyrie. Kyrie's a great player. You're right. He's a great postseason player because he can score in isolations, right? And he's a great shooter. And you need that in the playoffs against elite defenses. But, you know, James Harden has been the, you know, arguably the best offensive player in the history of the league the past 5 years. And Kevin Durant is one of the, 10 best players of all time, right? Like, those guys are in another stratosphere of player. And, like, you wouldn't be trading all those picks and all that stuff if you didn't think James Harden was going to come in and play like an MVP.
But the fact that we're having this conversation, the fact that we're talking about this, I think reinforces that it's going to be complicated for Durant to get in there with the high standard that Embiid, Jokic, and LeBron are.
Right.
And look, maybe they win 17 out of 18, because this is what happened with the Heat back. This is reminiscent of the Heat to me. Also reminiscent of the Cavs when LeBron called Kyrie a ball hog. Four games into their careers together. He didn't use those exact phrasing, but that was a game where Kyrie had like two assists in you know, seven quarters, and the game was in Salt Lake, and LeBron pulled him aside and was like, can't have one assist. Or you can't have no assists.
Did LeBron lie?
He did not lie, but I'm just saying that team later on went to the finals.
The Nets are coming into Wednesday are 11-8. So, I mean, they have the fifth most wins in the league. So, my only point is, I think we have to have him as part of the discussion, because if they're a really good team, again, he's going to have a pretty strong case to be in the mix. And, you know, it's just something I think, you know, because again, a lot of this stuff, for better or worse, for in the minds of a lot of voters, comes back to kind of the overall story of the way the season's playing out. And if Durant is playing this well, even with those other guys, and frankly, he's their best defensive player now too. Like, he's going to have to guard people for them to win games.
Yeah, he's our best basket defender at the moment. And I'll just say, I just know what LeBron's thinking here. LeBron's thinking, you guys all penalize me when I switch teams, you know, and build a super team, you know, keep the same energy. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Speaking of with LeBron, I've got a little trivia question for you guys that you'll never get, but I'm going to be interested to hear what your guesses are. This is one of the most incredible stats I've heard. Even though I shouldn't be surprised by it, it's an incredible stat. And this is brought to you by CarMax. Don't just buy a car. Love your car with the new CarMax. Love your car guarantee. Okay, so this week, LeBron won in Cleveland. He had 46. It's just an incredible fourth quarter after one of the Cavs front office guys cheered when he missed a shot at the end of the third quarter buzzer. LeBron posted the video. There's some video, by the way, of the guy, Jason Hillman, who I know personally, nice guy, but he got a little into the moment cheering when LeBron missed that shot at the end of the third quarter. And I think it was a 1-point game. The Cavs were up by one. And LeBron posted the video on Instagram and said, and I took that personal. Like the Jordan meme from the documentary. All right. With that win, this is from Elias Sports Bureau. With that win, LeBron is now 15-1 against the Cavs in his career as a Laker and a member of the Heat. That's incredible. 15-1. And the one victory was in his first season in Miami, the 2010-11 season. So that means that he hasn't lost to the Cavs. I think it was in about March, mid-March 2011. That's the second best player in history with a who's played more than 15 games against his opposing team. You'll never get it, but you guys want to even guess who the best record is against their former team in their careers?
Best record against their former teams, and it's a you'll never get it.
No, we'd be here for 3 years. So maybe I shouldn't even.
I feel like I've heard this stat before.
We need a hint.
He played for the Celtics and it was after he left the Cavs and it was in the 80s.
ML Carr.
He was a role player. You'll never get it. Let's just end the suspense. Scott Wegman.
Oh, okay. I was trying to think of bench players on the Celtics. I was like, Carlisle didn't play for the Cavs. I was trying to do a quick run. I would not have thought if the legend was still allowed on the pod, she would have got that right.
It was really more about the dominance of the Celtics over the Cavs in the 80s, apparently.
Yes.
He was 18-1. 15-1 against the Cavs. That's pretty good. Just in case you forgot how good this guy is. 15-1. The Cavs went like a decade without winning in Miami. Including the LeBron teams. When LeBron came back, they could never win in Miami. So the Heat have owned the Cavs for a while. McMahon, the game you covered last night was a really interesting game. Houston, Washington. John Wall, 24 points, coming back from some knee issues. Had a big fourth quarter. Reading your story about the game, he scored all – it was a 9-2 run that decided the game. He scored all 9 points and then got into it with Westbrook. They got double technicals.
Yeah, he scored six and then fed Oladipo for the other three.
Oh, okay, that's what it was.
It was chirpy, and Russ definitely holds the NBA record for most trash talked when he's down double digits. This is something he's done repeatedly, and Russ's thing last night is he didn't start it, but he's gonna return. Whatever. There was a lot of trash talk, and it was funny. Post game, Wall was, politically correct, polite even, I would say. He even pointed out, as he said, Russ been kicking my ass for years.
He knew the record. He says only the third time that he'd beaten.
And he was right. Yeah, Russ is now 11-3 in games against John Wall. So Wall is basically, hey, it's just trash talk. And Russ was having none of that. He, I don't start talking, bleep, You know, I just defend myself against people who just say anything, especially when I know all the facts, blah, blah, blah.
Well, Westbrook can't win on the court right now, so his goal is to try to win the press conference, I guess.
Yeah. And
what's the Wizards record with Westbrook, Bontemps?
1-8.
That's correct.
And look, obviously the
Wizards had a quad injury.
He's had a quad injury. They've had the rotation wrecked by COVID, but it's a bad team.
The problem with the quad injury is, you know, he spent the last 2 weeks resting the quad, right? And the thought was, all right, he's going to come back and look better now that he's had some time off, and he looks horrible. And I mean, he at this point is the single most damaging player in the league and is a millstone for that.
The single most damaging player.
I don't even think it's a conversation. I mean, he's an absolute train wreck, and he has the ball all the time. And you look at where this team is headed, and you're looking at 100 and, you know, I guess we're now a quarter of the way into the season, so we're down to $120 million over the next 2 3/4 seasons that he's owed. I mean, it's and a pick going to Houston on top of it. I mean, that is a rough looking transaction at the moment, and it's hard to see where this turns around.
I will say this: it's the second worst Russell Westbrook trade over the last couple of years, because the ones the Rockets
need to get him. I know you keep saying that. So.
It is true. 100% true.
You had to cover heavily the game, obviously. And there's a lot of, you know, stuff going on in the game, McMahon, but you had a quote in here from Wall that I found more interesting than any of that stuff. He was talking about the emotions of playing against the Wizards for the first time ever. He'd played there for a decade. And he said, "I just felt like post after being traded following the Achilles injury, you know, he missed a year and a half. I just feel like the organization thought I was done. No matter how much hard work I put in over the summer, they came and watched me. They thought I was done. That's why I came out here and did what I did." This trade is, it was interesting in the moment and continues to be more fascinating. And here, what Wall is saying is, you know, because there was rumors out there, you know, that people had seen John Wall play and looked good. And he's saying that the team saw him, you know, whatever the Rockets, the reports that whether Rockets people, you know, saw him and reported
the Rockets
back.
People didn't see him. The Rockets people didn't. The Wizards did.
The Wizards front office saw him too. I mean, it wasn't a secret that they saw him working out and playing. I mean, I think, look, John, it's, people don't really get the relationship that John had with the city of Washington. I mean, the Wizards have never been in the conference finals with that team, with him and Beal. And like people didn't really realize it, but he was very ingrained in that community. And it was a big deal to people there when he got traded. And it was a big deal to him when he got traded. And so I get where that emotion is coming from him. And I can certainly understand why he went out and played.
Yeah, just to remind people, you used to work at the Washington Post. So even though you weren't based in Washington, you certainly were very well aware of that later.
Right. And that was a pretty special bond that he had with that city. And, you know, for that to end the way it did, it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way in the community. And it didn't sit well with John. But look, I mean, I think at the time, it certainly felt to a lot of people in the league like that was a move that was made to make Bradley Beal happy. And it was not a move that necessarily the Wizards would have made otherwise. Now, that may or may not be true, but
narrator,
regardless,
Bradley Beal is not happy.
See the meme of Beal on the bench, head in hand.
That's right. And when the bigger picture thing with this, you know, whatever's going on in Houston, the Rockets kind of are what they are now for a while, as we know, they're going in another direction. The thing to watch for here is with Westbrook looking like this, and with there not really being to me a realistic scenario where this is going to dramatically turn around and he's going to look way better, you have to start looking at Bradley Beal and saying, is there a chance that sometime over the next 2 months, this guy becomes available in trade? Because teams around the league are looking at the Wizards and looking at Bradley Beal as the one guy left that could really change the landscape of the league in a trade. And, you know, whether it's Philly or these other teams that have assets still, Golden State, you know, the few teams that are still have designs of being good that have assets left are looking at that saying the second that Bradley Beal is openly on the market, there's going to be a gold rush to try to get him because he's the last guy that can really change the landscape for the Bulls.
Let's have a second CarMax trivia question just for fun. What do you say?
Oh, right. Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
CarMax. The following is brought to you by CarMax. Don't just buy a car. Love your car with the new CarMax. Love your car guarantee. How about that? So Bradley Beal, over the last 33 games for the Wizards. Why is it 33? I don't know. This is what Elias put together. Has scored 1,168 points. That's 35 points a game. Averaging 35 points a game over 33 games. The most points over that kind of span for the Bullets Wizards franchise since Walt Bellamy, 1962, when they were in Chicago.
I was going to go Elvin Hayes.
I was actually going to say Elvin Hayes too.
Something that hasn't been done in 50 years, at least for this franchise. 35 points a game. And this is, you know, this is not a small sample size, but I don't have their record in those 33 games, but I'll bet it's not good.
It's not good.
You know what though? What's crazy is as much as they have, obviously they're not good. I mean, they're 3-10 now. He actually has, it's not by much, but he has a positive plus minus.
That's a hell of a stat. That's a hell of a stat, McMahon.
Yeah. A positive plus minus. Yeah. For a 3-10 team. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, you look at some guys and say, well, those are empty stats. No, he's putting up 35 efficiently, right? I mean, he's getting to the line. He's shooting 48% from the floor. You know, 35 is not great from 3-point range, but it's not bad. You know, he's a good passer, especially for a 2-guard. I mean, he's plus 5 for the season in 12 games played, but still, to be plus anything for a team that's that big of a mess around them, that's pretty good. Russell Westbrook, not a plus.
You know what else? He's never been an All-NBA player. He's been close. He should have been an All-NBA player last year. He's on my All-NBA ballot. He was on my All-Star ballot too. Didn't make either. Had he somehow been able to squeeze an All-NBA over the last couple of years, he would have been Supermax eligible.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure the Wizards would have offered it. They offered it to Wall. And he might have signed it. He ended up extending his contract in such a way that made it not – it doesn't feasibly make a difference now. But, he's a guy who is going to have – because right now he is the definition of a Supermax player. Wouldn't you agree, Bontemps? Like, this is the type of guy that you want to have that mechanism to keep, and it's not even available to them. And, you know, now you wonder what's going to happen with that. I mean, it's what everybody's talking about in the league. There are executives out there who are, I'm just telling you this, like I talked to them, who are talking about moves that they can make going into this trade deadline or moves that they can make now that potentially set themselves up to make even a better Bradley Beal offer when that moment comes, whether it's in March or whether it's in August, whatever. But like,
no question.
There's so many people watching this, even though he is, to my knowledge, not made any request or anything.
No, and that's the thing, right? Everybody's waiting to see if Beal is going to officially say, kind of, you know, in a similar way to what happened with James Harden, right? Hey, look, guys, it's been a good run. It's time for me to play elsewhere. And that's the moment everybody's in the league is waiting to see, because he, you know, after Rudy signed his extension and Giannis signed his extension and, James Harden has been traded and all these seismic moves that have happened over the last year or two in the league, right? Beal is the one guy that's kind of still sitting there that hasn't moved, that could move, that would change the landscape if he did. And between now and March 25th, that's the biggest name that everybody's looking at. And if he doesn't say he wants to go anywhere, I don't think he's going to go anywhere. And I think to your point, if he makes an All-NBA team this year, which I think he's got a really good chance to, then he very well may sign a Supermax extension this summer, or at least they'll offer it to him.
The Supermax is already out the window for him because he's going to reach 10 years of service time. The reason the Supermax is valuable is because it lets you boost to 10 years of service time. You get credit for 10 years of service time,
that's
even if
right.
you've only played 7 or 8. But
yeah, I forget how young he is that he was a 2012.
But I will say this. We were talking about Embiid earlier. If Embiid makes all NBA this year and, you know, knock on wood, he doesn't get hurt, he should.
Well, he and Jokic both are Supermax eligible if they make all NBA this year.
Is Jokic as well?
Yep. Jokic can't sign it for a year, but he'll be eligible. He'll qualify, but they'll both qualify for it when they can sign it.
Good point. Good point.
Oh, can I just say, Bobby Marks gave us that last week.
I do think it is a premature and probably inaccurate assumption to say that Russ will be this bad. Russ stunk to start last season, and then there was a 2.5 month stretch where he played as well as he did, you know, even during his MVP season. You know, having said that, certainly the talent on the Wizards roster is not going to be tailored nearly as much to his skill set. And, you know, this whole thing, you know, Russ, I want to play my game. You know, the 18-foot pull-ups, like, that's a bad game to play.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine he's going to be this bad, McMahon. But the problem, the concern that I have is that when you look at where his shots are coming from, to your point, he's barely getting to the rim now at all. And they're all these mid-range pull-ups. And, I mean, that if that burst can't come back at all, he is going to be this bad.
It's not just the way Westbrook is playing. It's the way Westbrook is playing and the way Wall is playing and the swap that happened with this high stakes season with Bradley Beal, with the fact that they gave a first round pick. And by the way, the first round pick has protections on it that keeps it, you know, the Wizards can't trade another first round pick other than this year's pick, which they can't, they would be insane to trade. So it even affects what they can do business wise going forward. It's just, you know, and again, I'm not saying that Wall's going to be an all-star again. And it's not like Houston's setting the world on fire. They're a losing team as well. And Wall's had another injury. You know, both he and Westbrook have been out with injuries. Like, I'm just saying, though, that in the light of that decision, when you look at the two of them, you know, and you've got the exact same contract, the fact that you chose Westbrook over Wall, number one, and then number two, that you gave a first round pick. And
right. That's the thing. And it's a protected pick and all that, but still that the Rockets right now feel very good about the fact that, you know what, we've got the more productive player and we're the ones who got the pick.
All right. Well, speaking of big decisions, there's another,
which by the way, last year, Oklahoma City got the more productive player and so they don't feel good about that one.
Whom they later traded for more first round picks. They later traded. They got all the picks and swaps, got an all-star season from Chris Paul, traded him for a first round pick and Kelly Oubre, who they traded for another first round pick. So they, you know, you can do this all day long. All, you know, they're not going to be a playoff team. You know,
right, that being now said, the Thunder have won a lot more games than I think they anticipated / maybe are secretly unhappy about, given that they're 7-9 through 16 games at this point.
Right. I think they have more wins than the Rockets and Wizards.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket. With Vivid Seat Rewards, score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Okay, speaking of big decisions, one of the big decisions that was made in the offseason was the choice that was made by the Minnesota Timberwolves to draft Anthony Edwards ahead of James Wiseman and LaMelo Ball for the number one overall pick. Now, they played earlier this week. They play again tonight. Not that anything that happens in this game is going to frame that decision. The Wolves really, really wanted to trade out of that number one pick. Mm-hmm. And the reason they didn't want that pick wasn't just because they were having a hard time breaking the tie between those three top picks, but because they were really in a tough spot because Gerson Rosas, their GM, has a max player at playing center signed to a max contract, Karl Towns. And he's got a max player playing point guard, who happens to be one of Towns' best friends, and D'Angelo Russell. He gave away very valuable asset, which is a first round pick in this upcoming draft, to get D'Angelo Russell. And if he had drafted either Wiseman or Ball, he would have crowded either one of those guys who can block vote against him, frankly. And he tried like hell for months to get out of that number one pick all the way up until draft night. And in fact, the story that I heard, I think Bontemps, you and I have talked about this, even on the clock, he was trying to posture that he was going to take Wiseman in an effort to get the Warriors, who wanted Wiseman really bad, to flop with him and give him his draft pick back. Do a redo. And, you know, look, this happens every year at the draft. It's certainly not, you know, unusual. These games get played all the time. Wiseman specifically avoided working out for the Timberwolves. He said on the record, "Oh, I'll play Minnesota. I don't care." But if you look at his actions, he made himself fully available to several teams, including the Warriors, and kept himself away from the Wolves because he didn't want to go there. Or at least he definitely preferred, maybe he didn't want to is not accurate. Maybe he preferred going to Golden State, where he ended up going. And so with this sort of bucket of difficult decisions, and it's not to say that Anthony Edwards was not a prime choice. It just made it, he couldn't evaluate it, you know, squarely, evenly. He
made a number one overall pick based on position because of the circumstances you just laid out. He did not pick the best player number one overall. He picked the player
I don't know. That's debatable, but I think he was left with no choice.
He pretty clearly didn't pick the player with the highest upside. Now he may end up being the better player, but LaMelo had the highest upside in the draft, and he didn't take him with the first pick.
And I watch Wiseman play and get very excited. So
you didn't get very excited much last game. You didn't play a whole lot.
They took him out of the starting lineup and played much better as a team. And that's an interesting decision. They didn't take him out of the starting lineup because of his play. They're just having some issues.
It was in part because of his play.
It's because they're a significantly better team right now with him off the floor. That doesn't mean, he's 19. He played three college games. I mean, he is a 19-year-old project with ridiculous physical gifts.
Right. Well, and this is the reason it's such an interesting decision, right? Because to your point, McMahon, he has struggled at times in their starting lineup, and their starting lineup has been horrible. And they could have gone other directions. They could have, for example, put, say, Michael Mulder, a much better shooter, in for Kelly Oubre and gone that way. But, you know, Steve Kerr instead chose to bench the number two overall pick. And when you look at the Warriors in the bigger scheme of things, you know, they came into the season saying the number one objective was to maximize the development of James Wiseman. And, you know, you can argue whether they should or should not be pulling him out of the starting lineup and whether it's a better thing for them to do to try to win games right now, but he played 15 minutes in a game they won by 25 against the Wolves, who are probably the worst team in the league, especially right now without Karl Towns. So is that the scenario in which you're maximizing development of your number two overall pick, who, by the way, if Bradley Beal does become available, is going to be one of the major centerpieces of such a trade, right? So it's that is what makes it a really interesting decision.
Well, an offer. I don't know if that's what the trade would be, but it would be an offer. I mean, I'm sure that's what.
But I'm saying if Golden State's attempt to get Bradley Beal in such a deal would be centered around Wiseman and the pick they have coming up from Minnesota, right? Like that's the centerpiece of their offer. So, you know, that's what makes it interesting. It's not like, well, he's a young guy. He's going to have ups and downs. It's that his situation is framed within the bigger situation that Golden State's currently in.
Let me just say real quick, 30-second timeout. Let's say you're Tommy Shepard, the GM of the Wizards, and Bob Myers, the GM of the Warriors, calls you today and makes that offer. And there might be other pieces, parts, whatever, but says, hey, what do you think about Wiseman and the Minnesota pick for Bradley Beal? What do you think? Would you do that deal?
I mean, I would consider it. I would obviously shop around and see what other – you know, what other offers I could get, but that's a chance to get
the better question is that a better trade or is Ben Simmons a better trade for Washington? Because those are probably the two best packages on the market in some form. That's an interesting question that I'm not sure the answer to.
Well, I'm just because there's another factor there, which is then you go into tank mode if you're the Wizards, and you're now looking. I think the Minnesota pick is protected, so if it falls in the top three, you're going to lose it. But
no, they would get it next year as a fully unprotected pick.
And the other team I keep bringing up is the Nuggets, and you know, as much as we pointed out all the warts on Michael Porter Jr., I see him a couple nights ago at the American Airlines Center and was reminded that this is a 6'10" athletic, skilled, smooth, rapid.
He's a very, very interesting prospect.
Michael Porter Jr. has the type of talent that he could lead the league in scoring someday.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he got 30 easy.
The concept of that
easy off the bench.
The concept of that trade is that it would enable the Wizards to tank this season. And now you end up potentially two high lottery picks plus Wiseman. So you end up with basically three high lottery picks
in a
span. And that, you know, you got to draft well, you got to get somewhat lucky, but that's where you put your foot in the ground and say, okay, here comes a rebuild.
Yep.
Which, by the way, when you're 3-10, that's a pretty good time to decide, you know what,
probably a little early, but so getting back to Edwards is, so, you know, at the beginning of the season, if you listen to this pod at all, you know that my concern about LaMelo Ball is that, you know, he was a very low percentage shooter, in New Zealand. Anthony Edwards is shooting 34%. Now he's gunning on a bad team that is, you know, they've been missing Russell recently. They obviously been missing Towns a lot. There's not much going on there. Malik Beasley's playing well for them, but he's gunning. So he's coming and he's just gunning. He's shooting a whole bunch of shots. He's shooting low percentage, 34% overall, 27% on threes. Meanwhile, LaMelo is shooting a lot better. He's not going to make anybody forget Shaq's percentages, but in addition to LaMelo being a higher, you know, level efficiency player, he is a big time playmaker.
And a great rebounder for a guard.
Edwards is not. Edwards averages two rebounds a game. He averages as many turnovers as rebounds practically. He averages 1.9 rebounds and like 1.9 turnovers and 2.8 rebounds. You know, he's a 6'4 guard. He's super athletic, but he's never going to be a great rebounder. But LaMelo is a big time playmaker, creator. So way too early to make a full judgment. But, you know, you look at LaMelo and you look at Wiseman, that's another decision that was a huge, huge decision in the moment, kind of like what we were just talking about before with Westbrook Wall. It's a huge, huge, huge decision that affects you going forward. This is a huge, huge, huge decision that affects you going forward. And, you know, I don't know where Minnesota feels about it right now. I know he's had a couple of good games, but
I'm going to say this to kind of get pigeonholed into drafting for position at number one. And one of the reasons is D'Angelo Russell. And you gave up what's going to be a really high pick to go get D'Angelo Russell. That's tough, man. Guess who is dead last in the NBA in plus minus?
D'Angelo Russell.
By 48 points.
Oh, no.
By 48 points.
And D'Angelo Russell. And he's missed games.
Is minus 165. In 14 games. The next worst player is minus 117.
I mean, look, the bottom line here is the Minnesota Timberwolves bet their franchise on D'Angelo Russell. And that was not a very good bet, at least the way it's looking right now. I mean, that, you know, you could say that Karl Towns has not played with him yet. You could say, hey, when these guys are on the court together, they're going to have a great offense. Maybe that will be true because they basically haven't played together yet because Towns got hurt at the end of last season. And he's, you know, and now he's unfortunately out with COVID and, you know, he was hurt before that. So maybe they can get them on the court together and the two of them can, you know, find some synergy and figure it out. But, you know, I did not like the max contract. I was pretty loud at the time. I didn't like the move for Golden State when they signed D'Angelo Russell. He had kind of a fluky season and made the All-Star team in Brooklyn. And
he had a good year that year. He had a good year.
He was fine.
Minnesota was offering him the max, but I agree. I wasn't a fan of the signing.
That's fine. I mean, look, I'm not saying he was terrible, but I didn't think he was an All-Star caliber player. I thought he made the All-Star team, and at, you know, I didn't like the move for Golden State. I thought they might be stuck with a guy who didn't fit with their team, and they managed to find a trade partner with him after 6 months and traded him.
As good as a guy as Steve Kerr is, even he cannot be relied on to tell the truth, because obviously when they signed him, everybody said, this is just an asset play so you can get something right for Kevin Durant. And they go, no. We really think, you know, we're really high on him. And like 15 minutes later, they were trying to trade him.
Well, and look here, and here's the bottom line. In 430 minutes this season, the Wolves offense with him on the court is 102.4. That would be the worst offense in the league. Their defensive rating with him on the court is 119.5.
That would be the worst defense in NBA history.
I believe the Kings defense may be worse this year, but if not, it's the only thing preventing it from being the worst defense in NBA history. That's a negative 17.1 per 100 possessions.
Net rating, yeah.
And that's in 430 minutes.
That's a lot
of minutes. So, yeah. I mean, that is a team, to McMahon's point, they have gone all in on D'Angelo Russell. And again, Towns has played four games. They're plus six with him on the court. So I'm sure they would say in response, hey, listen, when Towns comes back, we're going to have a really good offense and we're going to be okay and we'll figure it out. Maybe
we're
going to
have a really good offense and we'll still be horrific defensively.
Right. I mean, look, it is it a trade right now that doesn't look great. And again, with that top three protection this year and an unprotected pick next year, that's looking like a really good asset for the Warriors. And, you know, potentially it's going to put the Wolves in a pretty rough looking spot if this doesn't improve pretty quickly.
All right. Well, we're out of time. I really wanted to get McMahon's reaction to, so we have a power rankings at at ESPN, and they're created by a bunch of writers put their power rankings in, and that's a composite of those numbers, kind of just like the AP poll for college football. Bontemps, they are private, but Bontemps published his on Instagram and revealed that
ill-advised.
Oh, I think it was nice.
What's ill-advised about it?
Dude, listen, I give the Jazz as much love as anybody.
You rank the Jazz number one.
Yeah. You put the Jazz number one.
How many games in a row have the Jazz won?
Okay, were they the best team in the league? Nine now. Were they the best?
They've won
team
nine
in
a row.
When they had their 19-2 run last year, last season, were they the best team in the league?
I wasn't doing power rankings.
I'm going to say
you were. So
okay.
You can go back
I'm asking you a question. I didn't ask about your power rankings, you doofus. You are the king. It's amazing. Your quadricep tendons are still intact as much as you knee jerk. Okay. Is it still Kawhi Leonard's league, or have you maybe realized that maybe LeBron still sits on his throne?
And I said last
you're
going to keep
it's
going.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing here. The Lakers have the best record in the league. They've got LeBron. They've got Anthony Davis. They improved their supporting cast.
Yes.
And the Jazz go on an 8 or 9 game winning streak, and
the Jazz have won, and
you're delivering to Larry O'Brien to freaking Salt Lake City.
Are you done yet? Now you're done. Okay. The Jazz have won 9 games in a row. They won 3 games last week by a combined 8 billion points.
They look great.
And the Lakers lost last week to Golden State. So I moved them down one spot. They are the second team in my power rankings right now. And yes, like if there's no point in looking at what is happening in the moment, then yeah, we could just have the Lakers.
It's not who had the best week, you bozo. It's who's the best team. If the Lakers and Jazz meet in the playoffs, are you picking the Jazz to beat the Lakers?
I think the Lakers would clearly be favored to win that series. I think the Jazz would have a chance to win. I think the Jazz are playing great. So I put them at first in my power rankings for this week. It seems to me insane that you would not take into context how teams are playing in the moment.
I moved the Jazz up to number 3 in my power rankings.
Okay, so I
won over the defending champions, who you've got LeBron playing.
All right. Well, let me ask you, they got two first team All NBA guys
and a better supporting cast. And then when they
let me ask you this
freaking playoffs,
what would it take? All right. You need to get your internet to work so I can ask you a question. What I also enjoy that we've taken over Brian's podcast. What would it
take for you? I'm not saying anything.
I was wrapping up the pod. What would it take for you to move the Lakers out of the number one spot in your power rankings? Is there anything short of an injury to LeBron or Anthony Davis that would do that?
Bare freaking minimum, the defending champions would have to not have the best record in the NBA. That's like at the bare minimum.
Well, okay. So what would it require for them to not be in the number one spot?
For them to lose more than a game, it's going to take a hell of a lot more than a team reeling off 8 straight, now 9 straight wins. I can tell you that.
I mean, I will say this, that it is supposed to be sort of a dipstick at any one time. I mean,
ooh, there's a dipstick here, but it's
Bon Tims. Brian set you up with that one. I mean, look, like I said, I had the Lakers second. That's the first time I haven't had him first all season. I think
you're never going to be able to go back to LA.
It was a nod to how well the Jazz are playing, and the Lakers lost once last week, so they moved down one spot. I didn't move them down to 15th. That would to me would be a different scenario. Like I think if I had them like 8th because they lost one game, like yeah, then I think you could go, what the hell are you doing? I mean, they're second, and the Jazz are playing out of their minds and annihilating people. Their starting lineup is demolishing people.
Clearly, as impressive as being the defending champions with the best player of this generation another guy who's a top five player in the league.
It's a 1 week power ranking. To me, if you're not looking at what's happening in the moment and making any kind of assessment, then like you could just do your preseason rankings and then change them once every 3 months and be good. Like, I don't know.
I have lobbied to our editors to have you removed from the committee.
Well, that would be the sure, because that's good.
This is why it's good. Thoughts. It's to have variance of opinion. All right. We should have just done this at the start of the podcast, and I could have just gone and, you know, had lunch.
One thing real quick before we go. Saker Smith passed away.
Yeah,
yesterday.
You know who would have enjoyed that back and forth a lot?
Saker Smith.
Saker would have been laughing his ass off.
Yeah.
For that people, back and forth.
I'm sure a lot of people have seen comments about him over the past day or so by the time this comes out. And I think I can speak for both Brian and Tim. He was just an awesome guy who, like Brian said, was always smiling and laughing. Mm-hmm. And I saw him in the bubble for 2 minutes. He was in the first tier and I was upstairs, and I saw him outside one day, and it was like I'd seen him yesterday, and I probably hadn't seen him in 18 months. And that was just how he was all the time. So just been thinking of him the last day or so and wanted to say something, because that was pretty tough news yesterday.
Everybody, please be safe, because Saker was a guy who you would have thought would have had a great chance to beat COVID. And COVID just reminded everybody about how dangerous it is. So please be safe out there. Thanks for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Tim and Tim. Maybe we'll just bring you guys on every week and talk about your power rankings. I have to encourage McMahon to publish his power rankings as Bon Tems did.
Well, the problem is I got hacked on Instagram, so my work, I don't know, I've got technical issues.
there's your excuse.
I'd love to see McMahon's hacked Instagram. That's all I'm gonna say. All right, thank you for listening. Thank you to Troy, our producer. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Adios, amigos.